You start your own investment advice company in Israel, then sell it to an American company, but still work for it. How does that go?
Well, you know, it's not necessarily my nature, but it's also a really interesting experience to figure out how you can interface with a remote entity that's much larger than you, and how do you work within the confines of a larger organization to figure out how you scale, but maintain and grow your culture as an autonomous, fastly moving, scrappy kind of team that can push out great products and innovation into the market really quickly.
And you have a biologically friendly, concrete business in Israel, but all of your customers are in another country. Where does the head of marketing for a tech startup financing company in Israel look to invest?
The UK is the prime market. The US is definitely a prime market. But we're sniffing very much in China because there's enormous amounts of this kind of investment going on, as well as tremendous amounts of fraud.
And the CEO of that company lets us in on how they decide where to invest. This is The Language of Business, a weekly podcast to inform and inspire entrepreneurs and anyone thinking about a startup. Learn about strategies that work and strategies that don't work. I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Our host is Greg Stoller, Harvard MBA and senior lecturer at Boston University Questrom School of Business. On this episode, The Language of Business travels to Israel. Here's Greg Stoller.
Thanks, Don. It's one thing to build up a company and sell it off, but what happens then? Now you're actually working for somebody else. We are on location in Tel Aviv, and welcome Rafael Uzan to The Language of Business.
Hello, hi.
So talk to us about your experience with Billgard.
So Billgard is a company that we founded in 2010 with my co-founder Yaron Samid, with the goal of helping people with their money. We started figuring out that we could use crowdsourcing, basically the ability to collect the knowledge of millions of consumers and to help them understand their bills and protecting them from unwanted charges. That was done. Many years later, we developed the technology, developed the products, created mobile apps that allow people to basically stay on top of their finances, getting alerts and intelligent, actionable insights in order to figure out how to be on top of their finances.
And what has happened to you since you've sold the company?
It was last October to a company called Prosper Marketplace, based in San Francisco. I stayed on. It was very important for me to be part of the transition. I'm heading up the office and business unit of what was Billgard, now part of Prosper. Basically, we maintained the office in Tel Aviv and grew it thanks to the added resources from the parent company, and grew the product thanks to the resources and the added capabilities that we got from Prosper Marketplace.
What is it like working for other people?
Well, you know, it's not necessarily my nature, but it's also a really interesting experience to figure out how you can interface with a remote entity that's much larger than you, and how do you work within the confines of a larger organization to figure out how you scale, but maintain and grow your culture as an autonomous, fastly moving, scrappy kind of team that can push out great products and innovation into the market really quickly.
You were born in France. You have been in Israel since you've been 16 years old.
That's right.
Billgard is based in Tel Aviv, but Prosper is based in San Francisco. How do you keep in touch?
You know, it's pretty interesting to see that despite the fact that we are all very connected and there are so many tools to stay connected with people, I think nothing replaces FaceTime. So every month I'm on a flight to San Francisco, and some of the people in HQ also try to make the trip once a quarter. And we send people all the time because FaceTime is primordial. Like, you need to create this type of human bond as a foundation. Now, additional to that, we try to figure out the model that works best when you have remote offices and different types of DNA, perhaps, or different types of culture, or kind of different types of competitive advantage. How do you basically take everyone's expertise and make it so that everyone can work together in tandem in a good way without creating overhead with poorly designed collaboration?
If you want to move on to your next startup, what happens to your relationship with Prosper?
To me, it is paramount personally that product creates to maximize the benefit of the app for Prosper. I truly believe in this kind of marriage because bringing, you know, marketplace lending with personal finance basically shows the next wave of, it's a foray into the next wave of fintech, basically personal finance for consumers, where financial services are smarter, less intermediated, cheaper, more relevant to you, creating a relationship with you, right, rather than acquiring customers, providing financial wellness on a day-to-day basis so that when you need a financial product, we're here for you. And that's something that I want to see in the world.
What advice would you have for a young entrepreneur who wants to sell and then deal with the person who bought them?
I think the main thing that was unique with this acquisition is that we literally fell in love, I think, with the Prosper team, and I think vice versa. We realized that even though we come from different backgrounds, we work in different size of teams and different locations, our hunger to disrupt financial services was literally the same. And I think we gelled around that. And I think the people material, DNA behind it all, I think is critical in order to make things happen. Because once you're away, you need to build a tissue of trust. You need to build a tissue of kind of common vision, even if you're not talking necessarily every day. And that requires a lot. And I think that that's at the human level first. I would say, of course, take a look at the economics. Of course, take a look at the strategy. But first and foremost, take a look at the people before you make any deal.
Rafael, thank you. Rafael Uzan, the co-founder of Bilgar, being sold to Prosper on location in Tel Aviv, Israel.
Coming up, you have a biologically friendly concrete business in Israel, but 100% of your customers are in other countries. Plus, where does the head of marketing for a tech startup financing company in Israel look to invest? And the CEO of that company lets us in on how they decide as the Language of Business visit to Israel continues.
Imagine running a company in one country, but doing 100% of your business in the other. We are on location in Tel Aviv at eConcrete. Ido Sella, welcome to the Language of Business.
Hi, nice to be here.
What does eConcrete do?
What we do is we modify concrete structure in a way that it can promote good biology and get benefits from the ecology and the biology to the infrastructure. Better, stronger infrastructure, marine infrastructure.
But you are all marine biologists and scientists in Israel, yet 100% of your business is done outside of the country. Why?
Now, Israel is a perfect scenario for research and development, but in our industry, which is coastal development, it's too small. So our market is huge, it's a worldwide market, and now the big project, because of increased storminess, it can be area of erosion and so and so. So we're actually operating from here, doing all the research and development in Israel, but implementing it outside.
How does your office in New Jersey work?
Basically, it's what we call a marketing office. We do most of the things from Israel, but when we need to meet clients, fly all over the US and see sites, it supervise manufacturers, it is done by the US office.
Why is your concrete so much better than the competition's?
Our concrete is basic concrete, what we call Portland cement-based concrete, is known as having a bad effect on biology. By modifying the concrete, by adding admixture and powders into the mix, we actually managed to change the property of the concrete in terms of biology, but not affecting its structural performance. So now you can get a concrete for any purpose, which is until now, but have the benefits of biology on it.
Why can't your competitors who are concrete specialists do the same thing?
They can modify the concrete, and I guess that with enough reverse engineering, they can get to the powders. But what we did is we worked for 3 years, and we actually showed, in terms of in large-scale experiments, how the technology performed. It's taking time for the biology to grow on the concrete, and we're running before the industry because we already did that.
Would you ever consider licensing the technology to others?
Yeah, that's what we're actually doing. Because we're not a manufacturer, we're licensing the technology to local manufacturers. It can be to precast manufacturers, it can be to entities which are big in the industry of marine construction. They hold the license, they have the technology, we provide them with the powders and the supervision, and they actually manufacture the units for us.
Are you unique being an Israeli company that 100% of your business is outside of Israel?
Definitely in our low-tech industry we are, but I'm not sure that there are other startup companies in Israel that do most of the work, I guess, almost 90% of the work outside of Israel.
Are you doing business in any other countries besides the United States?
We're starting now to work in Europe. Things are coming up in the Far East. We target the U.S. market as the first market because it's something which is very familiar for us. It's already ready and it's ripe for the technology. But we see that now things are expanding outside and projects are starting to come up at Europe.
You're licensing your technology. You have a problem in New Jersey. What do you do first? Get in a plane or do you have local staff?
The first thing is the local staff are dealing with that. We are blessed with very good people that are running the company in the U.S. They usually can manage up to 50%, 60% of the problems, if not we're being called, then we the first layer is that we give them support from here on a conference call, and if needed, we're flying.
Are they business folks or scientists in New Jersey?
They are half and half. One of them is a pure business guy and have a lot of background and experience in running projects like that and approaching the customers and dealing with customers. And the other one is a coastal engineer. As a PhD in coastal engineer, is a pure scientist.
Does anything keep you up at night about your business?
Yeah, the time differences. Usually night is when we get emails. So if there's urgent things, because of the time difference from Israel, we need to be on the, if there are things that we need to be on the spot, we do it at night.
Ido, thank you. Ido Sella, co-founder of eConcrete here in Tel Aviv, Israel.
Coming up, a visit to Acumeni, a tech startup financing company in Israel. Where do they look to invest and how do they decide? Next on The Language of Business. Our sponsor is Art Lifting. If you have a small business, or even if you run a Fortune 500 company, you can uplift the look of your office with Art Lifting. Art Lifting has over 1,300 artworks in a variety of styles and prices. You can buy them or rent them and switch them up on a rotation every month or so. But wait, there's more. All of the Art Lifting art is by artists who are homeless or dealing with disabilities. So you not only brighten and uplift your office, you're helping local communities across the USA. To learn more and view the collection, go to artlifting.com. The Language of Business visit to Israel continues. Back to Greg Stoller.
It's one thing to do study abroad, but another to meet your husband or wife in your own country and then move to theirs permanently. We're on location here in Jerusalem with Stacey Fassberg, and welcome to Language of Business.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
How did you end up in Israel?
Well, I started my MBA at Baruch College in New York, and there happened to be this lovely young man in the course with me who happens to be from Israel. One thing led to another. We got married less than 2 years later, and a year after that, we moved here.
And how many years ago was it that you moved over?
Exactly 20 years ago now.
What has happened over the past 20 years?
Well, let's see. We have two boys. We have two dogs. We have a bunch of fish. And I've been working and building my career.
When you came over 20 years ago, were you fluent in Hebrew?
I was not. And if I'm brutally honest, I will say that I'm not now. But I manage. I get by.
So how do you manage to work here if you're not fluent in the language, either spoken or written?
Well, my field is marketing. It's always been both in New York and here. And as you know, Israel has a lot of startups, and we export actually most of our technology and our products. So having a background in marketing and being able to speak English is actually a huge advantage, because most of the marketing work that we do is actually outside of Israel. So I found it to not be a disadvantage, in fact, perhaps an advantage.
Over the past 20 years, have you worked for startups or established companies?
Good question. When I first moved here, I found myself working for a company called Comverse, which was considered one of the best high-tech companies, very large offices all over the world. And I was there for 8 years and loved every second of it. But since then, actually, I've been mostly focused on startups.
And tell us about Acumeni right now, where you are the vice president of marketing.
Actually, I'm the chief marketing officer. Small detail. But, you know, I met Nachshon through my husband. They've known each other for years. And when I met Nachshon, I was taken by his passion, by his intelligence, but also his keen interest in building a team made up of people with different expertise. He comes more from the technology and business side. Of course, I come from the marketing side. And so we have this wonderful synergy of skill sets that we are able to work together, bounce ideas off of, and really work in partnership. And even today, we still are finding ourselves evolving and changing and working together, but it's wonderful.
When you work in the Middle East, how much does politics enter your daily life?
When we're here working by ourselves, we don't feel it too much. I will say that over the years, when I've worked for Israeli companies and had to present myself outside, there are some times where I've had to kind of back burner it. Some people hear my accent and just assume I'm working for an American company. It's not necessarily something we shout. On the other hand, we are proud, and we're not hiding who we are and what we do.
Israel has just over 7 million people. yet there are other markets that are far larger. What is your primary focus for Acumeni?
Probably the U.S. is a key market. Actually, the U.K. is probably leading in terms of GDP, in terms of crowdfunding and these kinds of activities. So I think that the U.K. is a prime market. The U.S. is definitely a prime market. But we're sniffing very much in China, because there's enormous amounts of this kind of investment going on, as well as tremendous amounts of fraud.
Are you able to control everything from Israel, or do you and Nakshon have to live on a plane?
Well, not yet, because we're still kind of getting ourselves started, but we are not adverse to the idea of having to move around and do what we need to do. Of course, assuming that the company goes where we'd like it to go, we will have offices in different countries as well. That would be awesome.
What is your advice for someone who tries to do something for study abroad, ends up living here for a few years, as opposed to you who have done this permanently?
Well, you know, it's an adventure. I was always open to the idea of living in another place, whether it be Israel or Europe or anywhere. And even today, I'm not closed to the idea of moving on to another place. You have to be patient. You have to be open-minded and ready to take on whatever happens.
What is the primary language at home?
We speak English at home because we wanted the kids to be completely fluent, because all of my family, of course, is in the United States. So it would have been quite uncomfortable to have the kids not be comfortable in English. So we speak English at home, even to the dogs.
Stacy, thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Stacy Fassberg, Chief Marketing Officer of Acumeni here in Jerusalem.
Still to come, the CEO of Acumeni lets us in on how they decide where to invest as the language of business visit to Israel continues.
There are websites today to evaluate cars and electronics, so why not startups? We're on location here in Jerusalem with the founder of Acumeni. Nakshon Pinko, welcome to the language of business.
Thank you. Welcome to Israel.
How does a website evaluate a startup?
When you have the ability to build a system that we take a lot of parameters and we check those parameters according to actual results of other startups or other companies, and then you do a benchmark according to that. And on the other hand, using pros, using a large group of people that would analyze the startup, and then when you merge those both, you get the result.
So it's not just you and your team, it's also outside people?
Of course, we are using a lot of experts. We are using what we called experts crowd wisdom. When we have a lot of experts in a lot of knowledge, and each one of them, by standing on himself and by isolating them, is giving us his opinion about this startup. And of course, that if he is a tech guy, we would give more power to the technology that he's talking about. And if it's a finance guy, then it would be vice versa. So,
what happens if a startup gets a bad rating? What can they do about it?
First of all, they would know what is bad. And they know what they have to correct. Because in the end of the day, we want to help them raising money. This is the most important. And on the other hand, protecting investors, not to get into those kind of startups that, you know, someone was talking about that in the CNN, and you are not really sure and understand what they are talking about, but it was on the TV, so let's go and invest.
How do you make money?
Oh, this is a great question. Basically, the money can come from a lot of places. When we are talking about investors, we are talking about two kinds of investors, main investors. So it can be either angels, that we are talking about early stage companies. Because when you are talking about more mature companies, you have information. We can help, I'm not sure someone needs us. When you're talking about early stage, there is no information, so we are creating one. And the money can come from investor that is saying to a startup, I want to test you, so please go over to Acumeni and I would pay the bill. Or on the other hand, it will say, don't come to me if you don't have Acumeni report. So the money can come either, but we make sure this is not something that would cost too much. We want to make it available to everybody and to make sure that it would be a tool to use and not like due diligence that would cost thousands of dollars.
And is your company only targeting Israeli startups?
Oh, no. We are targeting the worldwide. We are targeting any kind of early stage company, startup that would like to raise money. Either it's from angels, crowdfunding, or any other option. And we want to give this tool.
Why are you based in Israel?
We live over here.
Are any of your outside investors outside of Israel?
Not at this stage, but we're aiming over there.
And that's your plan? Are you looking for North America? Are you looking for the UK?
More North America, like anyone in Israel, you know, Silicon Valley. But less the valley, I believe, more like New York area, which is the new place for startups. And as I said, over even the Far East is very interesting for us.
Are the experts on your team getting paid?
Not in first stage. The experts in our team are going to be partners in Acumeni. We devoted 20% of Acumeni for experts. We want them to be partners, we want them to be have shares, to be part of us. It's very important. And if there would be a need for extra services, like a due diligence or help in technology, over there they would be paid by the one that is ordering that.
Nachshon, thank you.
You're welcome.
Nachshon Pinku, the founder of Acumeni here in Jerusalem, Israel.
Thanks, Greg. We publish a new episode of The Language of Business every Tuesday. We're available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and tune in and Google Play and Stitcher, or just say, Alexa, play The Language of Business.
Searching for latest episode of The Language of Business. Here it is from my cast.
We have downloads in 21 states and now in 24 different countries. Ukraine and Portugal are the latest additions. Thank you for the support. If you haven't subscribed yet, please do so. It's free and there's no obligation. Our director is Mark Mandel. Social media by Jennifer Powell of ExcellentWriters.com. Consulting producer is Helen Tierney of Happy Accident Productions. Audio editing and voiceover by yours truly. Special thanks to Mike Carruthers of SomethingYouShouldKnow.net. For Greg Stoller and the entire team, I'm executive producer Don Kelly. Thanks for listening to The Language of Business.